Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Domestic surveillance, gun control, campaign finance, the war in Iraq. The presidential campaign issues are many, and so, suddenly, are the Barack Obama supporters worrying out loud about where he stands? Some in the Obama camp say their candidate has shifted too far to the center for his general election campaign. Obama took the issue head-on this week in Powder Springs, Georgia.
This whole notion that I am, you know, shifting to the center, or that I'm flip-flopping, or this or that or the other. You know, the people who say this apparently haven't been listening to me.
This hour On Point, listening to Obama and the change that's ruffling feathers in the Obama camp. We will hear in this hour from the nation's Katrina VandenHeuvel and Salon.com's Glenn Greenwald, who's been right in the middle of all this. But first, joining me from New York is Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Richard Wolff, welcome back to On Point.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
I understand you're in Barack Obama's convoy headed through New York right now. We will hear from our guests today what they make of what's going on here. But what's at the top of the sort of laundry list that has some Barack Obama supporters so upset right now?
Well, there are two issues that I think are real reversals that have got people concerned. And then there's a whole host of issues that I think are fake reversals that are either misunderstood or actively sort of stirred up by Obama's critics on the Republican side.
Okay.
The two that are real are his reversal on the FISA issue, on the domestic surveillance question, which he voted on yesterday. He has reversed his position on that. And secondly, the other question is public financing of campaigns. Not so much a move to the center. I'm not sure where the center is on public finance, but those two issues have got people concerned. Now, there's a number of other issues that people are parsing and trying to interpret his position on the war, on abortion, on the death penalty. And those issues, I actually think, in many ways, the candidate is right. People weren't paying attention when he campaigned on them earlier, and they may have misconstrued, either willfully or unintentionally, what his real position has been.
Barack Obama has been talking a lot and very publicly for a long time. So what do you think has got people so stirred up now? If he's saying this, if he's saying the same thing, is there a different tone? Is he presenting these things in a different way?
Yeah, I think there is a different tone to the campaign right now as he's moved out of the primary and into the general election. He is trying to appear more reasoned, more pseudo-presidential, if you will. But I think a fair amount of this, particularly on the wall, for instance, is that people heard, they chose what they wanted to hear. And what they wanted to hear was his very clear opposition to the war at its outset. But he has always had these caveats about his withdrawal plan. He's always talked about being as careful getting out as he believes the president was careless getting in. And so I think people have maybe tuned out those words or didn't see them at the time. And of course, it is very helpful for the McCain campaign to suggest that there's really no difference between these candidates, or that Obama is a flip-flopper, because that line of attack worked so well against John Kerry in 2004.
Is the McCain campaign and the supporting media going hard on this theme?
Yeah, I think that there are a couple of things going on with the media. For a start, I don't think it's just the campaigns, but journalists also like to fight the last war, and some storylines are easy for reporters to repeat. The other thing is that there's a sort of generally accepted narrative that candidates shift to the center when they get their nomination, and it's a little bit lazy and a little bit sloppy, because this is a candidate who has always had an appeal to the center. If didn't have an appeal to the center, then he wouldn't have got independent voters and some Republicans to join him along the way in the first place. So there's a certain glossing over of things that were already there. They think that happened in the primary campaign that he took a lot of heat for, on his position on the war in Iraq and also on, for instance, health care. He took a lot of criticism for not taking a position on an individual mandate. That's something he took criticism for.
What about the war? Has Barack Obama changed his position? He's talked about a kind of time certain for getting out of there, with the caveats that you mentioned. So has he changed in the last month, two, three?
Well, there were several debates where he was asked to commit to having troops out by the end of his first term, and he refused. He took a lot of heat for that from other candidates, notably Bill Richardson, who insisted on a commitment to that date, and also later on Hillary Clinton. He has always portrayed his 16-month timetable as his best hope and as a guide of one or two brigades a month. Well, there's a difference between one or two brigades, and if it's a brigade, then you end up with a pretty different timetable. So flexibility, the sort of escape hatch, has always been there. Again, he's not emphasized it. His tone has shifted as he's moved the general election, and he's taking an even more cautious approach. But those caveats were always there. And again, I think people were listening. His opposition to the wars, to the invasion of the first place, rather than the nuanced approach he had to withdraw.
On Father's Day, he went hard on the theme of the responsibility of a father before a black crowd there. Jesse Jackson responding very heatedly, crudely, this week to that, apologizing for his off-mic captured comments today. Is Barack Obama, like Bill Clinton before him, looking for that sister soldier moment, in his case, to both be black but kind of hip-check a certain kind of stereotypical black perspective?
You know, there is an interesting contrast between how Reverend Jackson and Barack Obama talk to the African-American community and talk about these issues. There's more of an emphasis for Senator Obama on personal responsibility. There's more of a challenge to the communities to step up and face up to their own failings. And he's done that at various debates. He's done that at various speeches. And we're seeing some of those generational tensions being played out here. Is the campaign happy to have this kind of discussion and distraction? I wouldn't say happy is the right word. I mean, it's obviously causing some strains, and Reverend Jackson is in a very awkward position here. But generally, this is a position that, again, Obama has struck since before he started his presidential campaign. And is it helpful for him to be aligned with this younger generation of African-American leaders? I suspect it is politically.
Bottom line, Richard Wolff, is the Obama campaign worried about this whole line of attack and dissent within the Obama camp? Are they worried that it may be enough to leave people at home on Election Day, maybe change the outcome?
You know, I think there has been concern about the whole FISA debate. Enough of a concern that Obama himself put out a statement on Daily Kos about trying to explain his position. But, you know, with Nader in the race again, it could be close. And they want the entire Democratic base to be enthused and excited, both for money purposes now and also for turnout later on. So there is some concern there. But they also, I think, feel that there is a fairly narrow group of people who are that speed with all the contours of the domestic surveillance debate.
Richard Wolff there in the Obama convoy covering Barack Obama in New York today for Newsweek. Richard Wolff, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I want to turn now to Glenn Greenwald. He's contributing writer to Salon.com, author most recently of Great American Hypocrites. He's been following the whole kerfuffle around Obama, maybe more than a kerfuffle in this election season. He joins us today from Rio de Janeiro, of all places. Glenn Greenwald, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So, FISA in particular has been a big, big issue to you and many others. What do you make of Barack Obama's turnaround? He said he would not vote for legislation that gave immunity to the telecommunications companies. As of yesterday, he's done so. What do you say?
Right, I think that more than the substantive position that he's taken, which is rather abominable, worse than that even, is just what a complete betrayal it is of a very unambiguous commitment that he made when he was seeking the Democratic primary nomination. He emphatically vowed, not just that he wouldn't vote for a bill that had immunity, he vowed to more than that he would support a filibuster of any bill, as he put it, that contained retroactive immunity for the telecoms. And yet yesterday, the bill before the Senate did contain retroactive immunity for the telecoms. And not only did he not support a filibuster of that bill, he actually voted for closure of the bill, which is the opposite of supporting a filibuster. That's the way that you kill a filibuster. And then he proceeded to vote for the underlying bill itself. So it's a complete betrayal of the promise that he made. Worse than that, when he was seeking the nomination in various states such as Wisconsin, where there were lots of voters who cared first and foremost about civil liberties and constitutional issues, he allied himself very explicitly with Russ Feingold and Chris Dodd, said that he would stand with them in the battle against warrantless eavesdropping and telecom immunity. And a lot of people took him at his word, believed that he would do that, and voted for him as a result. And then to see him side with, in essence, Dick Cheney and George Bush and every single Republican senator and every single Republican House member except one in supporting this draconian bill is more than disappointing. It's, I think, quite alarming.
Glenn Greenwald, are you feeling a single-issue disappointment or alarm here, or a broader disenchantment with the Obama candidacy?
No, it's clearly part of a broader strategy on the part of the Obama campaign to not just, quote-unquote, move to the center. I think that's a misleading cliche because I don't think there's anything centrist about warrantless eavesdropping or immunity for law-breaking telecoms. I think those are right-wing policies at best. And so I don't think it's a matter of moving to the center. I think what you've seen in a lot of instances is that he's actually now trying to repudiate his own base. I mean, he gave a patriotism speech on July 4th, where out of nowhere he summoned up the left-wing demon of hippies in the 1960s who were part of the so-called counterculture, who hate America and blamed the symbols of this country, he said.
Glenn, stand by. We have to take a short break here. When we come back, Katrina VandenHeuvel joins us. We're talking about Barack Obama. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about unease, anger in the Democratic base over Barack Obama's alleged shift to the center, maybe the right, in his presidential campaign. We've been joined from Salon.com by Glenn Greenwald, who's been writing very avidly about Barack Obama's positions, particularly on the FISA domestic surveillance bill, where he voted yesterday for a bill that included retroactive immunity for telecommunications companies that went along with the Bush administration in domestic surveillance of American citizens. We're joined now as well from New York by Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation, co-editor of Taking Back America and Taking Down the Radical Right. Katrina VandenHeuvel, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's both listen, Glenn there in Rio and Katrina in New York, to the bit that Glenn just mentioned, if I may. This is a speech he made in Independence, Barack Obama, in Independence, Missouri on June 30th, talking about patriotism. It angered a lot of his left-leaning supporters. Let's listen.
Defenders of the status quo often accused anybody who questioned the wisdom of government policies of being unpatriotic. Meanwhile, some of those in the so-called counterculture of the 60s reacted not merely by criticizing particular government policies, but by attacking the symbols, and in extreme cases, the very idea of America itself, by burning flags, by blaming America for all that was wrong with the world, and perhaps most tragically, by failing to honor those veterans coming home from Vietnam, something that remains a national shame to this day.
Barack Obama, June 30th, Independence, Missouri, talking about patriotism. A lot of flack this week, Tuesday, Powder Springs, Georgia. He was on the stump affirming his progressive credentials.
I am somebody who is no doubt progressive. I believe in a tax code that we need to make more fair. I believe in universal health care. I believe in making college affordable. I believe in paying our teachers more money. I believe in early childhood education. I believe in a whole lot of things that make me progressive and squarely in the Democratic camp.
Katrina VandenHeuvel, Glenn Greenwald says there is something like a betrayal that's gone on here on FISA and a broader shift that's got him and others really uncomfortable. How do you explain what's going on?
First of all, I think it's very troubling that Obama inspired the support of millions when he refused to play the politics of fear and he called on us to heed the better angels of our nature. And he's signed a bill which Russell Feingold, the great defender of our civil liberties, says is really about the fear that the Republicans kind of inflict on this country at times of election. Only 4% of Americans cite terrorism as their greatest concern, so I think it would have been a moment for leadership. But let's talk for a moment here about the reality. Barack Obama is a progressive pragmatist. He is a candidate of a left progressive center coalition. He is running for president. He is not the left messiah. These last weeks are a reminder that he's a politician and that progressives are going to have to push to make space for the issues that they care about. Barack Obama wrote something interesting in his book, Dreams from My Father. He wrote, quote, he sometimes feels he's a blank screen on which people of vastly different political stripes project their own views. And if you listen to him during the primaries, he was not the most progressive candidate. John Edwards, Dennis Kucinich, perhaps Hillary Clinton in some ways. He wants to expand a coalition, Democratic coalition to include independents, even repentant Republicans. And my last point, how do I see this moment? You know, the nation endorsed Barack Obama. Tough love endorsement, not because we agreed with all of his positions. I mean, we disagree even on his position on the war, though we respected his judgment in opposing the war. But we believe that the new energy, that he's bringing into this process, the new progressive constituencies, will push the limits of his own politics and create political activists for years to come. And that, you know, a new president is no substitute for the organizing and movement building that's the primary force in progressive social change. And a new president is desperately needed a Democratic president to repair the damage done to this country, and the stakes are high. But I look at it as something that progressives need to mobilize around. You know, Hillary Clinton had a kind of tone-deaf comment in the primary when she talked about Lyndon Johnson and the Voting Rights Act. And there were people in the Obama camp who felt that she had denigrated the work of Martin Luther King Jr., who in fact had masses behind him. But it does take a movement leader working with a progressive Congress and a progressive president, or a president of a center-left progressive coalition, to make the civilizing advances that have made this country a better one, a more just one. That's how I see it.
Glenn Greenwald, what do you say to that view? He is a progressive pragmatist. He's not the left messiah, but he brings new energy and an opportunity for progressives. What do you say?
Well, I don't think anybody sees him as the left messiah except for people who conjure up rationalizations and justifications for anything that he does, including labeling support for Bush's most extreme policies in an effort to conceal rampant lawbreaking in this country as some sort of move of pragmatism. I think that the real danger in what Obama is doing is not that he's deviating from some left-wing dogma. I mean, I think it's absolutely true that Obama never held himself out as a sort of partisan dogmatist or pure progressive. I think the real danger is that by abandoning the things that made his campaign exciting in the first place, the things that brought all those new people into the political process, such as a refusal to capitulate to national security bullying or to engage in pure political calculus by pushing away his own base in order to please the establishment press or the right wing. I think by doing those things, he risks turning off the enthusiasm of the people who have been fueling his campaign. And I think that it's not just a substantively horrible thing that he's doing with all these positions, but it's a politically foolish one as well. I mean, the Democrats have a great advantage in this race. I mean, people are identifying with Democrats and turning away from the Republicans. The last thing I would think you'd want to do politically is discourage Democrats and try and move towards a Republican Party that's as discredited and sullied as a party can be.
I want to ask more about that, but we have so many listeners who want to join us. Let's go to Bill in Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Thank you. This is not a left issue. It's not a right issue. John McCain violated his oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States when he did not uphold habeas corpus. Hillary Clinton violated her oath when she came up with that ridiculous flag protection amendment. Now, what am I supposed to do when Barack Obama violates his oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States?
How? Where exactly, Bill?
Well, for one thing, FISA. I mean, that is as blatant a violation as a violation can possibly be. I mean, this is a line that he has crossed that I simply cannot cross with him. And I'm really, really disheartened about it. I've also taken that oath. I will not violate that oath.
You've taken that oath as an elected representative, as a serviceman, what?
I took it as a serviceman three times in my life.
Were you an Obama supporter, or are you still?
An Obama supporter, unless he can do something that turns this around. I don't see how he possibly can, because if he does turn it around, he'll get my vote, and he'll lose everybody else's.
Why will he lose everybody else's? I mean, I think he could have stood firm. I respect your point of view. But on the other hand, you should then work as hard as you can to elect a progressive Congress, because I think, I think Barack Obama, again, did not show that he's a leader on this at a moment where, as I said earlier, you know, Americans are not citing terrorism as their greatest concern. I think it's losing their homes and their jobs. And the question of why he didn't stand for this, I think, is worth exploring. I mean, some of it has to do with the fact that we've seen a Democratic failure in these last few years, where being tough on national security means that you support wars and the erosion of civil liberties. It is Barack Obama who has failed us with his vote, but it is also a Democratic Party which has failed to redefine what national security means.
So
I totally agree, but the one thing you do not do, you do not play politics with the oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. He shouldn't have voted for FISA.
Let's hear how Barack Obama explains that vote as he prepared to make it. Here he is, June 25th, and of course it's this issue of immunity to the phone companies who went in and wiretapped at the Bush administration's request. Listen for the distinction that he draws here in his stance.
My view on FISA has always been that the issue of the phone companies per se is not one that overrides the security interests of the American people.
Glenn Greenwald, he wants to put the security interest of the American people number one and make that clear in his campaign. Betrayal?
That's the exact dichotomy that the Bush administration has been peddling for the last 7 years, that either you give up your rights and stop insisting on the application equally of the rule of law, or you're all going to be slaughtered by the terrorists. That's the exact dichotomy that Obama said that he would refuse to capitulate to. And yet here he is spouting exactly that. We can't uphold the rule of law and make telecoms accountable in a court of law for having broken our statutes, because if we do that, we're going to jeopardize your national security. That is a false dichotomy. There's no reason whatsoever that the government can't protect this country under the existing FISA law. And to haul out the national security canard to justify what he's doing, I actually think is the most disturbing part of the whole episode. Is that what he's going to do when he's president, is start hauling around the national security slogan to justify these sort of extremist policies? I mean, he's doing it now. One would think that there's a high danger that he'll do it then as well.
Let's go to our listeners, Fayetteville, North Carolina. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Well, what do you think, Kathy?
I think he's doing fine. I don't like the FISA vote, but I understand the pragmatism behind it and the pragmatics trying to play the art of politics. If that's a way to describe it.
Do you think he needed to do that to get elected?
I don't know. What I was going to say was that I think we find ourselves so caught between doing either this or that we forget to go to something like it's both and. And so I suspect the legislation itself was the best they were going to get out. And under the circumstances, he did what he did.
Yep.
And he didn't want to be tarred with the idea that he's not strong on security.
Kathy, we've got it. Katrina Vandenhoevel, what about the political calculus here? I mean, do you think he needs to make these statements, take these steps, FISA in particular, to position himself for victory? Is there something gratuitous here?
You know, I think... I sit in New York City. I love this country. I have faith in the decency of the American people, as Barack Obama has said on the campaign trail. I'm not sure he can win in November with a campaign as progressive as some of us who are not seeking the White House would like. That pains me to say. On the other hand, Barack Obama has spoken about, one, changing the way Washington works, about a new kind of politics that speaks to, as I said earlier, the sort of better angels of our nature. He also believes in the power of his powers of persuasion to expand a coalition, which doesn't necessarily mean moving to their position, but bringing people to yours. So I think it would have been a moment for him to lead. And the problem, you know, and even Russell Feingold, who I said earlier, is really someone who has been a profile in courage on these issues, as Glenn Greenwald said, this taking on the false dichotomy that you can't be as tough in defense of the Bill of Rights and our Constitution as you can be in defense of our security. Feingold points out something which I think is worth remembering, which is not to rationalize. But the Republicans are always using these kind of votes when we're heading into a recess period or an election period. You saw that with the war authorization, which Barack Obama out of office had the good judgment to oppose. But they bring people in who don't then have the courage to stand up and say enough. And I guess, you know, Obama, one thing that was compelling was he did repudiate this politics of fear, which has so damaged our country. But I don't have an answer. I haven't traveled this country. I still think it's a progressive center left country, but progressive center. And I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong, as Glenn said, to single out one section of a patriotism speech to say he's moving to the right. I think Glenn said that. I mean, I work with Tom Hayden, who's on the editorial board of The Nation, if your listeners don't know. I mean, he's head of Students for a Democratic Society. If anyone's in the embodiment of the 60s, it's Tom Hayden, who leads a group called ProgressivesForObama.com, who believes that Obama is bringing out progressive activists different than those in the 60s, but with their own values and concerns. And patriotism is not a left-right issue. And I think Barack Obama's been nailed unfairly also for his discussion of faith-based initiatives, which the Bush administration made into a slush fund for their appointees. Barack Obama, a constitutional lawyer, has said he respects separation of church and state and a government role. But coming out of a community organizing tradition in Chicago, he also respects the possibilities of using organizations which do not discriminate in basis of religion or proselytize to bring the energy of communities together to solve problems.
Glenn Greenwald, what about it? Just politically, do you think he has needed to make these changes to put himself, to line himself up for victory in November? Would you rather have him lose than make these changes, or is that a false choice?
That's a false choice, and I'll tell you why. Prior to the 2006 midterm election, Karl Rove had a very clear strategy that he announced repeatedly, and that was he wanted to force a vote on the Military Commissions Act and on warrantless eavesdropping in both the House and Senate, which he did. Most Democrats voted against the Military Commissions Act, and the overwhelming majority of Democrats in the House voted against warrantless eavesdropping. He then made those two issues the centerpiece of the campaign in 2006. The Democrats are weak on security. They don't want to listen in when Osama bin Laden's calling. They don't want to interrogate terrorists to find out where these plots are. The Democrats slaughtered the Republicans in that election, took control of the House and the Senate. Clearly, these fear-mongering appeals no longer work, even in purple and in red parts of the country. The misconception, the central misconception that Democrats and the Democratic establishment has is that the reason that they look weak or are able to be depicted as weak is because they don't support Republican national security policies enough. It's the opposite. The reason Democrats look weak is because the country senses that they don't stand for anything. They're afraid of their own positions. And so when you see a candidate like John Kerry, for example, incapable of articulating a coherent position on something as fundamental as the war in Iraq, that is what made him look weak. And the danger that Obama is subjecting himself to is that by this vacillation on these critical issues, this so-called moving to the center, which is really an abandonment of his core principles, that is what's going to make him look weak, not a refusal to get closer to George Bush on national security, but a refusal to embrace his own values in a stable and coherent way. So I actually think not only is it politically unnecessary, it's politically self-destructive.
Abandoning core principles beyond FISA, and that's a big one for you, we know, and for many, but where else? Abandoning core principles is a pretty broad swipe.
Well, I think, for example, you look at some of the statements that he made in the wake of the nomination. Throughout the primary season, he had, for example, about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in I thought, pretty poignant and courageous terms, refusing to embrace one-sided pro-Israeli view. The minute he gets the nomination, he runs to AIPAC and gives a speech that's so hawkish on Israel that he declares Jerusalem to be permanently undivided and the property of Israel, which is even further to the right than the Israeli government is, and has to walk that back. He makes, you know, belligerent statements about Iran, whereas he refused to do so throughout the primary. He said the Supreme Court was right on the D.C. gun ban law, where 6 months ago he said he supported that law and thought it was constitutional.
Glenn Greenwald, hold the thought, hold the list. We'll come right back. We have to take a short break here. Katrina VandenHeuvel with The Nation. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're looking at Barack Obama. This is On Point. We're talking about unease, anger in the Democratic base over Barack Obama's alleged shift to the center or to the right, as our guest Glenn Greenwald what happened today in his presidential campaign. Katrina Vandenhoevel is with us as well, editor and publisher of The Nation. Greenwald from Salon.com. We're joined as well right now from Croydon, Pennsylvania, suburb of Philadelphia, by Fred Chamberlain, Obama supporter, financial secretary of the Boilermakers Union at the Philadelphia Shipyard. Mr. Chamberlain, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You sound by your position like a lunch bucket Democrat. What do you make of what's almost a furor over some of these shifts in tone and more that Barack Obama's been making?
Well, some of the shifts, I guess, are necessary as far as he looks at it. But, I mean, the biggest part of this whole thing is, let's talk about the middle class. If he doesn't stand up for the middle class, who stands up for the middle class? I don't hear anybody else mention the middle class. I mean...
So what does that mean? FISA, schmiza, don't worry about it. If he's right on economics, he's right by you?
No, I'm saying that that's very important in a lot of people's views. However, there's other things that are just as important. And one of them is the middle class and trying to save, you know, the middle class jobs. I mean, who's going to save the middle class if he doesn't?
You campaigned hard for Barack Obama in Pennsylvania. Now we've heard these comments in the recent weeks. What are you hearing from Democrats that you talk to, from Obama supporters, potential supporters? Are they warming to this? Are they worried about it? Are they angry about it?
Well, quite frankly, from where we are in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia suburbs, we have a lot of what you guys call lunch bucket Democrats, and they have a little bit of anger, but there's so much more important stuff here. I mean, you know, the price of everything's going up, and the price of our paychecks aren't going up. I mean, where do we stand as far as our priorities? I mean, he's for fair trade, and that's all we want is fair trade. I mean, as a union, reaching out and trying to, you know, do the right thing and be a middle-class family, have a home and a car and raise your children so that they can go to college, that's all a lot of people ask for. And quite frankly, a middle class has been taking on the chin a lot lately. So,
is he for fair trade? He was critical of NAFTA during the campaign. I'm not sure what you mean by fair trade, but then more recently he's made, you know, conciliatory noises about NAFTA. So is that a place where he's changed as well? Does that worry you?
No, not at all. I think he's going to work with the leaders in Canada and Mexico to fix NAFTA so it works for American workers. Remember, it has to work for the American workers. That's the bottom line. I mean, he said he wants to use the trade agreements to spread the good labor environment standards around the world. And he wants to stand firm against agreements like CAFTA and, you know, important agreements like that. So, I mean, what else can we ask for? Somebody's going to stand up to the things that are broken.
Fred, stand by. Let's go to Ted in Burlington, Vermont. Ted, what do you think?
Oh, I would just like to say, thank you, by the way, for a great show. I'd like to agree with Mr. Greenwald because I was a big supporter of Barack's when he came here in 2005 to speak on behalf of Bernie and Peter Welch, and I thought he was going to be the guy. And I just feel betrayed. I feel like his recent statement about how those that are attacking him aren't paying attention. I, for one, have been paying very close attention every single day to this thing because I just feel like this administration is getting away with murder. And to co-opt these arguments about, you know, whether you're an American or not, whether you believe in this or not. I mean, he needs to be above this.
But what do you think of Fred Chamberlain's view from the Boilermakers Union, Philadelphia suburbs, saying, look, who else is going to stand up for the middle class? Don't rock this guy's boat.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not a member of that. I mean, I can't speak on behalf of that. I can only speak on behalf of our personal privacy. I mean, I agree that this isn't the only issue, but I also feel very strongly that this was his one big moment to show that he was going to stand up to this administration, and he supported Feingold, he supported Leahy and Dodd, and then at the end of the day, he caved, and I was going to vote for him, and now I'm going to vote for Ralph Nader.
Even if that might mean a McCain presidency, you sound like a Democrat.
I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent.
Okay.
I voted for Nader twice, and there's a lot in the Democratic Party that blame people like me for where we are, but you know what, they had a chance to win and they couldn't beat him. It's not Nader's fault. It's their fault for not putting up a good candidate. And I'm going to do it again because he's betrayed, you know, the Democratic Party's betrayed us again.
Ted, we've got it. Thanks very much for your call from Burlington. Let's get Harold from Quincy, Massachusetts. Harold, you're on the air.
Hey, are we talking about idealism here or realism?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What are we, naive? It's the 21st century. I'm 71 years old. I've been through wars and presidents all my life. I was a devoted Democrat for many years, and like a previous caller, I dropped out because I was disillusioned with them, and I became an independent.
But doesn't the U.S. Constitution embody idealism? Isn't it idealistic. Isn't that part of the idea?
What are you smoking today, brother?
Okay. Really?
Let me tell you something. If you want more of Bush and Republicanism and all that, you don't have to vote for Obama. You want to go with NATO with the Greens, or you can go with Barr. Look, he's a bright light, Obama. He has something to say. He's young. Maybe young people will stimulate him to do something. But Reverend Wright said he's talking like a politician, because that's what he is.
Harold, we've got it. Glenn Greenwald, what about it? You hear what Harold has to say? We talked with Will Marshall at the DLC earlier, Democratic Leadership Council. He said, you know, kind of the same. He said, you've got to go this way to win, and it may not be everything you want, but it opens up a chance, an opportunity for progressives in an Obama presidency. What do you say, Glenn?
Now, I agree with the caller's basic point. I agree with the point Katrina was making earlier that, you know, you need to give Obama some room to have some strategic decision-making. He needs to win an election. He can't appeal to left-wing purists, and he shouldn't do that. And I don't think anybody's suggesting that he ought to. And I also think that, you know, there's still clear differences between Obama and McCain. And I hope that nobody who's disappointed or angry with Obama will decide they're going to vote for Nader or do things to elect John McCain, because I think that would be the real betrayal of the principle. I think the point is that what Obama is doing is not just that, it's not that he's deviating from ideals that are ideological. What he's doing is undermining the very thing that made him an exciting candidate in the first place, which was not partisan allegiance or ideological purity, but the idea that he would engage in this campaign by challenging and defying rather than giving into the premises of the Republican Party that have so destroyed and eroded our country. And I think that's where the anger is coming from, is that now he's becoming an ordinary politician who looks weak and unprincipled. And it's not that he's impure, it's that he's doing things that will undermine his chances to win and to transform and change the political system.
Fred Chamberlain, I've just got you for another minute. Do you see Barack Obama cutting into his own chances to win, or you know, buttressing them, building them with these positions and this tone?
No, not at all. You know, the general election, it's different than the primary is. You know, it brings a focus to the new issues. But, you know, his positions and his approach has always been the same. I mean, he talks from the heart. That's what pulls everybody in. It's not so much he has to be straight and narrow on everything that he always said. That's what makes a great politician, a guy that can bend. If he needs to bend to bring the people together as Americans, so be it. Let's bend.
Fred Chamberlain, Financial Secretary of the Boilermakers Union at the Philadelphia Shipyard. Thank you very much for being with us, Fred.
Thank you for having me.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, so be it. Let's bend. Is that your song?
Well, I mean, I think your caller who talked about what are we smoking, I mean, I live every day with a kind of determined realism and grounded idealism, or vice versa. And, you know, the nation saw in Barack Obama someone who, yes, was a historic candidacy. He spoke to change. But again, I come back to the point that understanding how social change is made in this country, he's going to need wind at his back. And Fred Chamberlain speaks from the heart. I respect him. And I think the labor movement is going to need to be a wind at Obama's back, because his first instinct isn't really to have a strong fair trade policy. He is someone who has been more centrist on those issues. John Edwards was someone who spoke more eloquently. So I think what we look at is a country where the stakes are so high. I mean, Glenn spoke about the Supreme Court decisions, again, troubling Obama's reactions. We could cement a right-wing Supreme Court with extraordinary damage, not just to reproductive rights, which, by the way, Barack Obama spoke about in a room of 2,000 women just an hour ago in New York City, standing applause, but workers' rights, pay equity, the environment. And I just think that those are things we need to focus on. I see Obama's election as the first step in repairing the damage done to this country and to the world. But it's going to take many more steps and people engaged and involved. I would simply say to your caller who will vote for Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader is an extraordinarily brilliant, decent man. He wrote his first article for The Nation in 1959. Please read my 8,000-word article on just democracy, a manifesto for how to bust open our downsized system, because without a slew of electoral reforms, which Ralph Nader should be crusading on around this country, third parties, I fear, are not going to bring about the change until we bust open a system with reforms I write about.
Let's get a call right here from Jamal. Jamal, in Hampton, New Hampshire, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I think what we see with Barack Obama is, you know, the political environment that he grew up in Chicago, You know, obviously, in a lot of his associations, we're very far to the left. And I think now in his campaigning across the country, in his move to the center, I think, you know, the point that's being missed here is that, you know, not the entire country shares, you know, the Chicago liberal view. And I think he's come to the understanding that, you know, as far as there's many people who oppose FISA, there's just as many people who feel that, you know, because of how easy it was for the operatives to operate and, but, you know, implemented the 9/11 tragedy, we saw a real weakness, kind of like a real loophole, a real ease with which to have it done. And I think the biggest irony is his base criticizing him for not supporting the Constitution as far as the FISA, but why is he getting criticized for upholding the Second Amendment? To me, that's a little hypocritical, but I just think, you know, Obama realizes he does have to kind of centrist his views if he is going to get elected. I mean, if you come into this election way far on the left, you're not going to win because that's just not the majority of you.
Jamal, let me ask you, my friend. Jamal, are you African-American?
No. My name is Turkish, actually.
I just wondered by the name.
But I
want to turn to the Jesse Jackson material here and Barack Obama on that front. Jamal, thank you very much for calling. Let's listen to the clip that in part is part of the kind of thing Jesse Jackson was responding to. This is Barack Obama on Father's Day in Chicago on the South Side with a message, kind of tough love message for fathers.
We need fathers to recognize that responsibility doesn't just end at conception. That doesn't just make you a father. What makes you a man is not the ability to have a child. Any fool can have a child. That doesn't make you a father. It's the courage to raise a child that makes you a father.
All right, some of that coming back in the news this week after pretty hot comments by Jesse Jackson. He was on Fox News on Sunday. It's all tumbling out now. But he was expressing unhappiness with Barack Obama. He says he thought his mic was turned off when he made a kind of crude remark. You hear it bleeped out here. This is Jesse Jackson. Well, you can listen. Oh, that is even softer than I thought on the whisper front. He says, see, Barack's been talking down to black people on this faith-based, I want to cut his bleep off. Glenn Greenwald, are you in touch with this community? And what do you think about this whole back and forth between Jesse Jackson, Barack Obama, Jesse Jackson Jr. upbraiding his father? What do you make of this?
Well, you know, this is not anything new for Obama, that kind of a speech. And I actually think that this is the sort of thing that speaks well of Obama and that highlights the assets and the value that he has. I mean, he is willing and has often talked about his willingness to go before audiences and not say things, as he puts it, that they want to hear, but say things that they need to hear. And he's been very willing to go before lots of different audiences. He was in an Atlanta church on Martin Luther King's birthday, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, and spoke to an African-American audience about prejudice against gays and lesbians in the African-American community. So he has been willing to deliver the kinds of messages that are quite unorthodox and not politically safe. And I think the fact that, you know, some of the older African-American leaders are reacting poorly to it sort of highlights that novelty of Obama and probably is politically beneficial at the end of the day. I think that's the Obama we want to see more of in the general election.
Katrina, do you agree? Is it a net plus for his support among African Americans, which has been so strong? Does Jesse Jackson represent a more widespread feeling there, a kind of wounded old warrior who's not happy with the new messenger?
I think that we see generational divisions in the African American community every day, and certainly around this issue of personal responsibility, not just a generational difference, divisions, but across the board in the African-American community. You saw it father and son, in a sense, between Jesse Jackson and Jesse Jackson Jr. You know, Jesse Jackson ran a very important campaign in 1988. He won 13 primaries. He brought millions of new people into the process, as Barack Obama has done. He ran a more radical campaign, and he has worked in these last months to bring attention to a mortgage crisis which is ravaging African-American Latino communities. And I think it's that frustration that is not new. Reverend Jackson spoke about Barack Obama not paying enough attention to the racial crisis in Jenna, Louisiana. I'd simply point out, you know, that Jesse Jackson's been to the Nation offices quite a few times in the last few months, and he's always spoken of Obama as the culmination, again, of the movement, of martyrdom, of marches. Barack Obama sees himself out of that. He's been respectful toward that tradition, but he is of a new generation, like the new head of the NAACP, a 35-year-old journalist, activist, Ben Jealous. It's a new generation different than the civil rights industrial complex, as some call it.
Yeah.
But I hope this is not overblown, because I think one needs both traditions. And, you know, politically, how does it play? I don't care as much about as the morality and the issues involved.
Real quick to Denmark, South Carolina. Reggie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you know, Reggie?
Just wanted to say that I think that the theory of the Barack Obama's position is really weird, because I don't think he shifted anything that anybody else should have shifted as a leader. I mean, if you're a leader, you have to be able to shift your position and moderate it so that you can make the best decision. And I just don't understand why, when politicians do this all the time, people get up into a fury. I mean,
is he keeping the African-American vote with him, despite what Jesse Jackson had to say, maybe off mic there, Reggie?
I think that he was right on when it comes to what he was saying about African Americans and how men don't take care of their fathers. And I'm black myself, and I see it all the time around me in my church and everywhere. So, you know, Jesse Jackson was saying what he felt, and, you know, I think it's just him just putting his position out there. But as to whether it's going to cause Barack Obama to have any problems with appealing to the masses, no, a lot of people are really thinking about the issue.
Reggie in Denmark, South Carolina, thanks very much for your call, and thanks to all of our guests this hour. Glenn Greenwald in Rio de Janeiro with Salon.com. Glenn, thank you very, very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Katrina Vandenhoevel with The Nation, editor and publisher there, joining us today from New York. It's always great to have you, Katrina. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.